this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, but please do not call unless we specifically ask for questions, because we have with us tonight on the line Dr. Russell Blaylock, and Dr. Blaylock's a neurosurgeon. He practiced for 21 years or more. He's retired now, lives in Jackson, Mississippi, and he writes the Blaylock Report, a newsletter on health issues, and he spends his time researching the things that, well, we should all know about our health and about nutrition and the relationship between nutrition and behavior and all sorts of fascinating things. We carry a number of his books, and certainly one of our favorite guests, Dr. Russell Blaylock. Russell, thanks very much for being with us again.
Well, thank you, Stan. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, I thought we'd talk about the effect of nutrition on human behavior.
All right. I think that is such an important issue.
Yeah, it really is, and it's underappreciated not only by the general public, but there's a large number of physicians, even people interested in nutrition, that don't really appreciate the serious impact poor nutrition has on human behavior. We're talking about things like anxiety. We're talking about mood, depression, things as serious as schizophrenia, panic attacks, some very serious effects on human behavior, and they're corrected in many cases by simple alterations in the diet.
I was really most interested in the influence on criminal behavior and addiction and things of that sort, and I know you're going to be covering that in a few minutes.
Yes, there's quite a few studies that were quite interesting in which they looked both at prison inmates and some major prisons in Alabama and throughout five other states. Prison system in Portugal was examined. And they did these experiments where they changed the prisoner's diet, got rid of the bad foods, and replaced it with healthier foods. And they found some rather dramatic improvements in the behavior of the prisoners. This was extended to the juvenile prisons. And eventually they said, well, let's look at just the normal population. And when they looked at the normal population in schools, and one of the largest studies was 1,100,000 school children in New York State, and they found the same thing. So universally they're finding that a large number of our population have either single nutritional deficiencies, for instance, a single vitamin like thiamine, vitamin B1, or they have multiple deficiencies. Sometimes it's a deficiency in a fatty substance like the omega-3 fats. But they have profound effects. And we'll go through those and show you some of the profound effects this can have on human behavior.
Well, Dr. Blaylock has really put together an amazing talk on the DVD. We actually carry the DVD, and we'll tell you more about that later. But it's called Nutrition and Behavior. And I really think it's so vitally important that people understand the relationship. And if you're not eating right, if you're eating the typical American diet, and then you see what happens to the people who've actually changed and transformed their diet as far as their health, but even more than that, as far as their mind is concerned, and you'll be amazed, you'll be quite amazed at some of the things you're going to learn during this next hour here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, go right ahead.
Well, to take a look at one of the experiments that was done, they took some normal people, and what they do is they examine them first to make sure they don't have any psychological problems or addiction problems, that they're perfectly normal. And in one group, they purposely fed them food for several months that was deficient in just one vitamin, vitamin B1. And what they found is that these people began to have a personality change. They became more quarrelsome. They were irritable. Some became quite aggressive. It was easy to trigger anger in these people. And that after they had clearly established this, that these people had undergone this transformation, they resupplied the vitamin B1 just to see what would happen. And over about a month's period, that behavior changed back to normal again. Their aggressiveness was gone. Their irritability was gone. Their hair trigger anger disappeared. So this is an example of how just one single deficiency in one vitamin can cause a rather profound change in how we behave. Now, in some of the prison studies, what they did, and some of them are quite profound. For instance, let's start with the probation studies. They did these probation studies on people who were out of prison, and they changed their diet in half of them and gave them really healthy food. They cut out all the sugars and the caffeine and the bad fats and oils and lots of fruits and vegetables, good diet. And they compared them to the matched group of people who continued to eat what they normally did, the typical American diet. Well, they found there was a 56% reduction in antisocial acts, that is, involved in crime, fights, violent behavior, 56% reduction in that behavior. I got that back. It's 56% of these parolees continued to have that kind of behavior, but in the people on the good diet, it was 8%. Involved in antisocial acts. So we see a tremendous drop in antisocial behavior just by a simple thing of changing the diet. Well, to their surprise, they saw the same thing with narcotic abuse. 47% of the people that were consuming the bad food, the high sugar diet, etc., they went back and abused drugs again. But when they switched the diet, they had only 13%.
Well, you hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring all of our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock was simply pointing out that in prisoners who were on probation, they changed their diet. And if they had a good diet, about 56% of the prisoners participated in antisocial behavior. These are people on probation. But among those with a proper diet, only 8%. And then, of course, they found very similar findings as far as narcotics was concerned. And those who were certainly on a poor diet had a high incidence of going back to the narcotics. But if they were on a proper diet, a very small percentage of them went back on narcotics. And this was really an amazing finding. What did they do with the information, Russell?
Well, not a lot. But what we're starting to see is there's a tremendous interest now and finding the parts of the brain that cause narcotic abuse, and they're tracking it down to certain types of neurotransmitters in the brain. And these neurotransmitters are sensitive to our diet, so that if you eat a certain diet that's deficient in essential nutrients, that part of the brain becomes overactive or dysfunctional, so that they seek drugs. And that if you change that neurotransmitter balance, they no longer have interest in drugs. So there's a lot of interest in the scientific research of this, but as far as practical application, very little is being done. Now, one of the things that they found in the course of these studies that was sort of a surprise is that there was a dramatic reduction in suicides. You know, one of the problems we have with people who are in prison or recently released from prison is very high incidence of suicide. And when they changed their diet, there was a dramatic reduction in the suicide incidence. So here we see three things that were quite profound: a reduction in antisocial activity, a reduction in drug use, and a reduction in suicide. So these are three major social problems that we have in this country. So this is rather profound. Well, they looked at incarcerated prisoners, for instance, in the Alabama prison system, and they did the same thing. They switched their diet, got rid of all the bad food, the high sugar and the MSG and the various additives in the food, and fed them basically a good, healthy fruit and vegetable diet, the proper fats and good pure things to drink. And what they found is in a short period of time, there was a 42% reduction in criminal behavior. That is, violating the rules of the prison, attacking other prisoners, attacking guards, destroying the property. Rather dramatic reduction. And they also saw that after 1 year on this diet, there was a 61% reduction in these activities. So in the behavior of our incarcerated prisoners, some of the worst of the worst, we see that this produced a rather profound effect. Well, a number of studies have found that people who are in prison because of major crimes, a high percentage, some of 75% has shown that they're hypoglycemic. They have very low blood sugars, and that they tend to drop their blood sugar very easily when they eat foods that are high in sugar. Well, most people are eating diets that are very high in sugar. They drink Cokes and they drink alcohol, which also drops your blood sugar. And so we see a very strong correlation between sugar consumption and violent behavior and suicides. The type of thought processes that entail thinking things that have to do with violence. In that study they found it. Well, then they looked at five different prison systems and they repeated it and again carried it out for over a year. They saw the same thing. There was about a 50% reduction in antisocial activity in the prison, particularly violent acts. They looked at the juvenile prisoners. They went to juvenile prisons and looked at thousands of these juveniles, changed their diet, same event. They changed their behavior, became more agreeable, had less violent acts, less breaking of rules. And this has been repeated in foreign countries over and over and over. These studies are showing the same thing. Well, one of the researchers who is connected with the criminal justice system there in California, he looked at this in a very scientific way. He used a double-blind, placebo-controlled set of studies in a large number of people. And he found was that this was repeatable no matter what age, no matter what situation, no matter what country. He looked at 13 of these studies that were randomized, double-blind studies, extending everywhere from Arizona, California, Missouri, Oklahoma, Belgium, England, Scotland, Wales, and they found the same thing, that not only was there a drop in this antisocial behavior and violence, but there was also an increase in IQ. They particularly found this in the young inmates, that there were, on average, when you just had moderate improvement in their diet, there was a 3.2 increase in their IQ, a point increase. And this has been consistent. Everywhere they've tried this, they find the same thing. Well, they're not even using high-powered nutrition. This is just a simple multivitamin they would give them. And so they extended this to not only changing their diet, but sometimes just giving them a vitamin or a group of vitamins. And they found the same thing, that behavior improved, IQ improved, it was easier to deal with the prisoners, and they had less problems. Well, they wanted to quantify this and say, well, is this real? So they, one of the researchers did a brainwave test on these people. And he found that in incarcerated prisoners, particularly the violent prisoners, they frequently found abnormal EEG patterns, brainwave patterns. And that if you gave them certain supplements, particularly things like vitamin B6, folate, riboflavin, these abnormal brain waves begin to correct themselves, and it went right along with the improvement in the behavior. Well, they found the greatest effect in the prisoners that were most violent, so that the worst or the highest degree of violent behavior had the best effect from correcting the nutrition. The two vitamins that most had to do with thought processes that deal with violence, thinking violent thoughts, was riboflavin and folic acid. And we see this consistently in young people as well as older people. Well, Dr. Schoenthaler, who is in connected with the criminal justice system and does this carefully controlled research, he's repeated this study numerous times throughout the country and consistently found the same thing. When we look at individual cases, for instance, like John Hinckley, well, it was known that John Hinckley was a junk food addict. He ate donuts and coffee, and he would live on that. He would rarely eat any healthy food whatsoever. And so we see that a lot of the people that are involved in this criminal behavior and drug seeking are people that are severely malnutritious, or sometimes they just have a single vitamin deficiency, and it's producing a disruptive society. Well, when we look at the school lunch program, and there was a study in Insight magazine, and the title of which is "What is being fed to our school children?" Well, they found that the meats that were used in the school system were of such low grade that they couldn't be sold in supermarkets. The vegetables were the same thing, and the children rarely had fruits or vegetables available. So their diets were horrible. And we see this throughout the school system all over the country. Some of these studies that have been done in school children, just normal school children, what they found is that if you fed them just a multivitamin, their IQ improved significantly, but most important is their behavior. They were able to sit in the classroom and concentrate on their studies. They weren't disruptive. They weren't talking out loud. And so that the school teachers had a much easier time teaching these students and controlling the students. And this is even done on a really large scale, as I said, in the New York public school system. They looked at 1,100,000 children, and they were looking at their SAT scores. And they took them for a year, and some of the students, they changed their diet, just taking a few food dyes, sugar, and things like that out. And they found there was a jump in the SAT scores. They continued that for another year and found out that it held pretty steady. So they took out some more of the bad foods, added more good foods, and there was another jump in the SAT scores. Overall, there was about a 16.7% increase in the SAT scores just by changing the diet. Nothing else was done. And they were given a multivitamin to take. So as we look at these things that are being done, both experimentally in animals, but mainly the human studies, we're seeing such profound effects, particularly negative effects of bad nutrition, and we're seeing such profound positive effects when the nutrition is changed to very healthy food. Yet most parents are not aware of this. One of the really impressive things that I've found is the effect of the high sugar intake. And this society is obsessed with sugar. Most children would not drink water. They want Cokes, and they drink these large 32-ounce, 78-ounce drinks. Well, that's about 10 to 20 teaspoons of sugar in each of those drinks, which far exceeds what's being recommended. And this produces a tremendous increase in impulsive behavior. And that is what's behind the aggression. When you're a small child, it's your frontal lobes of your brain that controls your impulses. And that's what this sugar does. It makes you lose your impulse control.
All right, will you hold that thought? We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock talking about nutrition and behavior. And believe me, this is a very important subject. Okay, Russell, pick the story up there.
Well, just to give you an idea how much we changed in our consumption of this sugar, in 1900, the average person ate about 4 pounds of sugar per person per year. Now it's up to 129 pounds per person per year. That's a 2,500% increase in sugar consumption. Well, what happens in a large percentage of the population, it's estimated about half of the population, that when they consume this large amount of sugar, what happens is they have an overstimulation of insulin secretion. That causes their blood sugar to fall very low. And if you've ever experienced that, what happens is you start trembling, you get very nervous, and you lose your impulse control. You get very angry very easily. And we've seen incidences of hypoglycemia in which a person will lash out and kill another person. Now, when we do the same thing in experimental animals, we see the same response, that they will lash out at the other animals very viciously. And it's because as your blood sugar falls, there's several things happen in the brain. One is an increase in a transmitter called glutamate. And glutamate activates excitation. So your brain becomes very excited, particularly the parts of the brain that have to do with the emotional control, what we call the limbic system. And so the more primitive impulses in our brain start increasing in activity, and our control system that controls our impulses begins to decrease. And the response to that is that we find a very violent person, so that you have road rage or airplane rage or just rage attacks, where a spouse will attack another spouse and beat him senseless. And a lot of times what we're seeing is because of the sugar. Now, they looked at a tribe that has one of the highest violent acts percentages of any known group of people. They're an Indian tribe that live in South America. And what they found is that about 75% of these people have reactive hypoglycemia, and about half of them it's very serious. And that the most violent acts, the most criminal acts, including rape, was occurring in the people who had the lowest blood sugar. And that their diet consisted principally of potatoes. Well, potatoes act just like sugar. It drops the blood sugar very low, produces an excess secretion of insulin, and triggers this aggression and this loss of control of impulses. Now, what we see in this society is children sitting around eating potato chips all day. That's their snack food. And we see mothers putting potato chips in their lunch pails so they can munch on that at school. Well, several things happen when they look at people who are doing that. One is the increase in impulsivity, that is losing your temper easily and anger and anxiety. But they also have impaired learning. And when they looked at a very carefully controlled study in which they gave students, college students, just a single Coca-Cola, and they measured their ability to perform a test at about 30 minutes, and found that they were impaired. And at an hour, they were severely impaired.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply talking about the relationship between sugar and the function of the brain, and how actually sugar consumption had gone up at the beginning of the 20th century from about 2 pounds per person per year on average to well over 150 pounds per person per year, and that there's a definite relationship between a high glucose level, which we'll get, say, after eating something laden with sugar, and our ability to think and function and pass tests. And so you pick up this story there, Russell.
Right. And so what they were doing in these college students is seeing the effect on their ability to complete a test. Well, they found that after drinking one Coke, within that 1 hour, they made twice as many mistakes in the test as a match group that was not drinking Coca-Cola. So, when you go to most campuses, what are the students drinking? Well, they're drinking some sort of sweetened soda. And the ones that aren't are drinking diet soda. And the aspartame, of course, contains an excitotoxin, just like glutamate, that produces the same excitation produces the same impairment in learning, except it's even worse. So we see that a large percentage of our population is engaged in a dietary act that actually severely impact behavior and severely impact the ability to learn. And so we're not surprised that we're seeing all of this violence in our society. Well, one of the things that happens when you're consuming a lot of sugar and having these hypoglycemic spells is it changes another transmitter in the brain, and that's serotonin. And when serotonin levels are low, we know that increases psychopathology, that is, abnormal criminal acts. Particularly things that have to do with violence, very aggressive acts. We also know that it's strongly correlated to suicide, strongly correlated to depression, particularly severe depression. Now, what happens in the criminal is two neurotransmitters are particularly affected. One is a very low level of the serotonin and a very high level of what's called dopamine. Another neurotransmitter. Well, high levels of dopamine are associated with schizophrenia-like behavior, paranoia, things like that. So we see that because of changes in your diet, you can produce imbalances in the brain that very closely resembles serious psychiatric illness. And there's a study that was done in Germany, and they found that actually subclinical, that is, mild deficiencies in vitamins. One of the first signs that we see of that mild deficiency is psychopathology, that is, abnormal thought processes, increased aggressiveness, anger, increase in a loss of impulse control. These sort of things all get worse. And that's the earliest sign of these even mild deficiencies in vitamins. Now, when we look at the elderly, we see they're severely deficient in a number of these vitamins, particularly riboflavin, which I said was so critical for thought processes. And so when we look at the elderly population, that is everybody over middle age and above, we see that they have a high incidence of depression, a very high incidence of irritability and anger and loss of impulse control, and we see that they have a very high suicide rate. When we look at what their diet and their deficiencies do, we shouldn't be surprised, because if you do this experimentally in humans or in animals, you get the same effect. Well, one study has shown that even though the young people are consuming these sugar-laden products, particularly the sodas in large percentage, actually the people who have increased the most are those in the middle age, particularly over age 60. They found a 300% increase in the consumption of sweetened sodas within the last several years. So our older population is copying the bad nutrition of our younger population, and they're getting the same effect, except it's even worse because they have a poorer nutritional status than the young people. And this is having profound effects on our society. You know, we hear all this talk about, oh, we have so many suicides, what are we going to do? We need to have psychiatric testing of every child in the United States and put them on psychotropic medications. Well, that's ignoring this massive amount of research that said no. The problem is poor nutrition, and what we need to do is change their nutrition.
All right, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blay about this. We explore this intricate relation between nutrition and behavior, but this can certainly have a profound impact. It does have a profound impact on young and old alike. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about the relationship between nutrition and behavior, and Russell, pick this story up.
Well, another area that we need to touch on is the young children, the really small children. And a lot of parents, particularly when I was practicing, would come to me and say, well, you know, I have a four-year-old, and he just goes crazy. And it doesn't matter if I spank him. It doesn't matter if I punish him. He's throwing things and breaking things and screaming, and I don't know what to do. You know, what's happening to my child? Does he have a brain tumor? What's wrong with it? Well, what's wrong with him is he's having spells of severe hypoglycemia. And what I would do is tell these parents, well, you need to take them off all of these sweetened products. Don't give them any more sodas. Get them off the sugar. And the ones that would do that, they would come back in about 2 weeks, almost always with the same story. They would say, it's like I have a brand new child. That I cannot believe it is pleasant. No more screaming spells. It's like suddenly I was given this very nice, sweet child again. Now, when we look at what happens in hypoglycemia, what happens in the brain, we shouldn't be surprised, because when your blood sugar falls, excitotoxins increase in the brain. It's a reflex activity, and the brain becomes very hyperactive, particularly the limbic system that has to do with anger and impulse control and aggressiveness. And we have cortisol secreted, which also does the same thing. We have epinephrine secreted, which does the same thing. So that's why you have this child that looks like it's suddenly turned into a monster or possessed by a demon. In fact, Keith Connors, who is a professor at Duke University, at least he was, and he dealt with ADD. He was the director of the Center for ADD Studies. And he tells of a child that they were doing this double-blind study on, and they gave this child just a single cookie that was sweetened with normal sugar. And this 7-year-old child just went absolutely berserk. The mother said the child took a knife, sliced the couch up, went outside, took a hammer and beat the neighbor's motorcycle to pieces, and she just couldn't control him. Now that's from a single cookie. So, you know, you can see this almost psychopathological behavior, this scary behavior that you would expect of a serious psychopath occurring that was purely dietary.
All right, you hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. And Dr. Blaylock, I want you to get your website out. I want you, for our listeners, Dr. Blaylock writes the Blaylock Report. It's a monthly newsletter. I take it. Always look forward to it. It's always got fascinating material in it. And certainly when you subscribe, or you can pull down the earlier editions and have those, and we have them in a book. From the very, very first one right up to the very present one, there's always something there that's worthwhile, and information you need to read, to study, and to begin following. So how can people get in touch with your information?
Well, they could go to my website, which is www.russellblaylockmd.com. That's RussellBlaylockMD.com. And that has the books and the various things on it. Plus, I have what I call a blog site, and it covers a lot of scientific items that I go into detail, like mercury poisoning and the heart attacks and strokes. I cover a lot of subjects in there. If you want to go directly to the monthly newsletter, you can go to www.blaylockreport.com, and you can get it. Through that. It's put out by Newsmax magazine. But I try to cover a lot of subjects: diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, cancer. You know, it switches through a whole spectrum of studies, mercury, vaccine. So the newsletters are varied and cover a lot of diseases and conditions that I think readers would be interested in.
And, of course, it's always based upon sound scientific studies and sound scientific information, and so you can trust it. And certainly I've known Dr. Blaylock for many years, and he wouldn't be on here with us at Radio Liberty if I didn't know that you could trust the information you're hearing. So I began to take heed in understanding the profound impact, certainly on certain people, that sugar can have, but it isn't good for any of us. In fact, you know, 100 years ago, the American people were so much more healthy than they are now. And it all has to do, certainly exercise is one thing, but nutrition is really by far the most important thing. So pick the story up, Russell.
Well, if you really want to look at one of the most dangerous combinations that you could possibly design, which is very common in our society, it's three things. Having a low magnesium, having a high intake of sugar, and then eating foods that contain excitotoxins like MSG and aspartame and hydrolyzed protein and soy protein. That combination produces the maximum abnormal stimulation of the brain, particularly the parts of the brain that have to do with suicide and aggression and panic and anger and anxiety. When your magnesium level is low, that really magnifies that effect. And magnesium deficiency is very common, particularly in people that drink a lot of sodas. That's because the phosphate and the carbonation in the soda depletes the magnesium. So our teenagers are severely depleted in magnesium. Well, this is so important, it's also a major reason for sudden cardiac death. A large number of deaths occur in the United States every year from this condition, sudden cardiac death, in which people just out of the blue, with no hint that there was anything wrong with their heart, drops dead. And even when they autopsy these people, often they don't find any abnormalities. There's no severe occlusion of the arteries in their heart. And it's been sort of a mystery. Well, when we look at animals, if you take an animal and you lower its magnesium by giving it a magnesium-free diet, and you frighten that animal, almost 100% of them will die from sudden cardiac death. If you feed them magnesium and frighten them, death is very unusual. Well, we see this in a large number of animal species, and we know that it also occurs in humans. That's because magnesium protects the heart from overactivity. The MSG and the glutamate that causes the problems in the brain also are known to act in the heart, in the nerves of the heart, in the arteries of the heart. And so that if your magnesium is low and you're consuming MSG and soy protein and these other things, and your blood sugar falls because you're consuming a lot of sugar, the heart becomes hyper-irritable, the blood vessels can be thrown into severe spasm, and it produces sudden death. This is no secret. This is known in the scientific literature. The problem is most doctors don't know it because they haven't read this. They don't read this literature, and their societies aren't telling them. And the public sure doesn't know this. They're not aware of this at all. You know, I've seen young people in their 20s die. One, I was in a bookstore, and a young man died right before my eyes from this very syndrome. And he was the son of a pathologist. So this is another major problem. It's not just behavior; it's also physical death and severe problems there. It also increases seizures. For instance, if your blood sugar falls and your magnesium is low, you're much more likely to have a seizure. If you have a seizure problem and you're consuming a lot of sugar that's dropping your blood sugar and your magnesium is low, you can take a lot of anti-seizure medications and you'll have the dickens trying to control your seizures. And I found very few neurologists who are aware of this. Yet it's in the scientific literature. We know this very well, and almost all the anti-seizure medications now act by blocking glutamate, the excitotoxin in the brain. So here we're eating diets that are loaded with excitotoxins, we're eating diets that lower our magnesium. A great number of prescription medications, particularly heart medications, lower your magnesium. We have this obsession with sugar, so that triple combination there is deadly. And it not only affects behavior in a very severe way, it affects your physical health and increases your risk of this sudden cardiac death. So I think people should be aware of that.
I think I'd like to sort of comment on the magnesium deficiency, because I know when I was practicing medicine, we used magnesium or Malcolm Magnesium as a cathartic, and then, you know, certainly for preeclampsia during the terminal stages of pregnancy, you know, when a woman had hypertension and convulsions, well, you gave her magnesium intravenously. But that didn't happen very often. Most doctors don't even think about magnesium, but what has happened is their soil become depleted as far as magnesium is concerned. There has to be a reason why there's so much of a magnesium deficiency in our people today.
Well, it's mainly because of their diet choices, their food choices. They eat very few fruits and vegetables, particularly the vegetables. That's where you get most of your magnesium. People eat primarily meats, particularly the heavy meats. They eat a lot of grains and a lot of white bread and rolls and potatoes. They're not eating things that have high levels of magnesium in it. And they're taking a lot of prescription medications, particularly after age 50. A large number of medications lower your magnesium. And even in young people, for instance, birth control pills significantly lower magnesium levels. That combination of a poor diet, not eating the foods that have the magnesium in it, consuming a lot of these carbonated drinks which deplete magnesium, and taking prescription medications that deplete magnesium, that's why we're seeing such an epidemic of this. But it increases strokes. It increases heart attacks. It increases the risk of you dying from either one of those conditions. For instance, we know if you take an animal and you deplete its magnesium and then tie off one of the arteries to the brain, there's a high percentage of those animals that'll die, and the others will have severe neurological deficits. But if you give that same animal magnesium and then tie off the artery, most of those animals recover and none of them die. They recover from their stroke. So recovery from a stroke and a heart attack is much higher if you have a high intake of magnesium. I used it in my neurosurgical practice all the time. I gave infusions of magnesium to every patient that went to surgery, whether it was a lumbar disc, a cervical disc, a brain tumor, an aneurysm. They all got a dose of magnesium. Well, one of the problems I never had was post-op thrombophlebitis or pulmonary embolism. And that's because magnesium improves blood flow through these vessels. It prevents the thrombophlebitis. And so I never had that problem. Well, my colleagues, they were having patients die and patients having severe pulmonary embolism because they refused to use the magnesium. I've tried to get so many neurosurgeons to use magnesium in their practice, and they won't do it because no one tells them to. Yet, if you look in the scientific literature, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of articles and studies that have shown the enormous benefit of magnesium in protecting against all of these things.
You know, I think one of the most significant things is how it quiets down the hyper irritability of the heart. Some people tend to have a very rapid tachycardia, or the heart will be firing off impulses, so you'll get skipped beats. And if you take the magnesium, that quiets that down in the same way it quiets down leg cramps and restless leg syndrome, doesn't it?
Oh, exactly. Because it's the natural calmative of nerves. Most of the nerves are activated by glutamate receptors. And magnesium is a regulator of the glutamate receptor. It tends to tone it down so that it doesn't overreact. Well, all the nerves in your heart are controlled by glutamate receptors. And so magnesium is very, very important in controlling the irritability of the heart. So if your magnesium is low, your heart muscle becomes very irritable. Well, the leading cause of death after a heart attack is what we call arrhythmia. That's where the heart just develops this abnormal rhythm and cannot pump its blood. Magnesium can prevent that in a large number of people. But you have to take it every day. You have to eat the diet that contains the magnesium. A lot of the nuts contain magnesium, like peanuts and cashew nuts and pecans. They're all walnuts. They're high in magnesium. So that's another way you can get magnesium. Not that I would encourage you to eat a whole lot of them because of the bad fats in them. But these are the type of things we know that unfortunately the public is not being told. Physicians don't know about it, and they won't treat their patients with magnesium. Every IV you see that's hung in a hospital, they'll add potassium to because they told them to. But nobody puts magnesium in the IV, and magnesium is significantly more important than potassium. And that's so ironic, and you ask a physician, well, why would you put potassium but not magnesium? They can't tell you. They say, well, you're supposed to. In medical school, they told me to, my training. This is the problem we have. They just don't understand the serious impact of this, how vitally important these things are. And the same thing with the nutrition and behavior. You ask the average pediatrician about nutrition and his child's behavior, he's going to tell you all kinds of crazy things. Well, you know, they've done studies and they're really not conclusive. Well, I've reviewed all of those studies, and the best of the studies are absolutely conclusive. I have treated these children, getting them off these sugar diets. I have witnessed their behaviors changing dramatically for the better. Even the pediatrician, when he sees it happen himself, he's so obsessed with his training and what he's told, he denies his own experience. But parents are just going to have to say, well, I'm taking over the care of my child's nutrition, and I'm going to get him off this food. Barbara Stitt, who was the parole officer who wrote a book on nutrition and behavior, and the parolee she took care of, she tells a very interesting story. She said she was giving a lecture, and one of the mothers came up and said, oh, you got to help me with my daughter. Said she just eats everything that's sugars. She won't eat anything but sugar things all day long. She's just stuffing her mouth. And she said, I don't know how to stop her. And she was thinking, well, the girl must be a teenager or 20-year-old. She said, well, how old is your daughter? And she said, oh, she's 3 years old. He said, well, how do you think this gets into your house? You're buying it. You're putting it in your child's house. So I tell the parents, the best way to control it, don't buy it. Don't let it in the house. 3-year-old's not going to go out and buy their own food. So if it's not available, if it's not in the house, they're not going to be eating it. And the child will see, the child will become more pleasant, more even-tempered. These spells of anger and tantrums will start disappearing. Even if at first the child throws tantrums because they're not getting their sugar they want or the frosty flakes they saw on TV, slowly that'll go away and they'll lose this obsessive desire for sugared foods. But parents should start this as soon as the baby's born. Don't start giving the baby fruit juices that are highly sweetened and apple juices. You need to avoid that. Don't introduce the child to high sugar intake from the moment of birth. And that way it's much easier to control.
Well, there's really so much here to know, and I'll have to admit, in all the years when I was practicing medicine, that was for 40 or more years, I never once considered magnesium, nor did I have any idea about the things that I've learned since I've had the opportunity of course, leaving medicine, of beginning to do reading and studying, and of course read Dr. Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And if you haven't read it, you need to get it. We do carry that, as well as his two other books. And again, I recommend very strongly his newsletter, which is the Blaylock Report, www.blaylockreport.com. You can go to Dr. Blaylock's website, is Russell, RussellBlaylock.com, www.RussellBlaylock.com. And heed this information. Magnesium is very important. You're probably, you get it from green leafy vegetables, too. But how many people are eating a lot of green leafy vegetables? So would that be a fair statement?
Oh, exactly. Well, the website is www.RussellBlaylockMD.com. Yeah, the people just are not eating. You know, you most people say, oh, I hate broccoli, or, you know, I eat a little bit of salad, but they're not eating five or six servings of vegetables and fruits like they're supposed to. Most people, you say, well, you should be eating that much every day. They say, gee, that's an awful lot. But that's what's required. And every study that shows that people eat five or six servings, there's a dramatic decrease in all of these chronic diseases. You know, recent studies show that if people follow the Mediterranean diet, it reduces heart attack deaths 79%. There's no medication that can even come close to that. 79% reduction just by dietary change.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock just to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I would mainly tell people that at every age, nutrition is absolutely essential for normal behavior. If you're having problems with depression, omega-3 fatty acids are essential. We know that that has a major role to play in overcoming depression. Your magnesium is important. Your multivitamins are important. Changing your diet is important. And virtually everybody, if they follow the diet they should, will immediately tell you within 2 weeks it's the best they've ever felt in their life.
Now, you've mentioned in the past the relationship between diet and schizophrenia. What was that study?
Well, there was a study done in Sweden, and I met the doctor that did this study. He's a very well-regarded scientist. And he found that schizophrenics were allergic to gliadin and gluten, which is a product of protein in foods, particularly breads and grains, and that if you took them off of it so that they got absolutely none, all of the schizophrenic patients in his psychiatric hospital recovered, became completely normal. But if they even were given a small amount of gluten or gliadin in their food, they became fully schizophrenic again. But as long as they maintained the diet, they were okay. And that shows that what the gliadin and gluten is doing is producing an immune reaction in the brain that is disrupting the neurotransmitters. And when you combine nutritional deficiency on top of it, you get the schizophrenic behavior.
And, of course, they're selling, you know, literally billions of dollars worth of Prozac and Luvox and all of these psychotropic drugs, whereas, of course, simply altering the diet would certainly solve the problem and would solve it permanently. And the difficulty is the doctors or psychiatrists are not hearing this information, and I wonder why.
Well, you know, if we can't depend on the medical profession anymore. We're going to have to take this bull by the horns. And parents need to start correcting these diets. Adults need to start correcting their diets, taking their supplements, and protecting the right to have supplements. Because there's people out there that want to take that right away from you.
And, of course, I think I always like to tell the people, I think they've got to start educating the doctors. They're not going to like to hear it. But you need to get the scientific studies. You need to look them up. And then you need to take them to your doctor and just ask him, well, if this is true, I mean, why aren't you utilizing this information? After he gets done being mad at you, maybe he'll thank you. I know on more than one occasion I thanked a patient for coming to me with good ideas. Well, okay. I guess it's been Dr. Russell Blaylock. And, hey, Russell, thank you so very much for being
thank
with us.
You,
we'll look
Sam.
Forward
really
to having you on again. Good night.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Now, the entire story, you can, of course, get a copy of this tape, or better still, there's a DVD that Dr. Blaylock has done. It's called Nutrition and Behavior. It has much more than we covered tonight. We just sort of covered the tip of the iceberg. It's an amazing story, and I would suggest, if you really like to know more, you need to get the DVD, Nutrition and Behavior. We carry Dr. Russell Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. It is probably, next to my own book, Brotherhood of Darkness, our all-time bestseller here at Radio Liberty. That's Nutrition, or the Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And then, of course, we carry his book for cancer patients, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. And we've had many, many people get this book. They're going in for chemotherapy, and of course, you know, your hair falls out, you get deathly ill, you wish you could die, and the trouble is that if you do what Dr. Blaylock tells you, your hair doesn't fall out, you don't get deathly sick, your doctor will not have any idea why this is happening. He will just be really amazed. Why aren't you having all the problems everybody else does? But of course, he has no idea the information that's here, and it's all about nutrition. Dr. Blaylock's book on excitotoxins, the taste it kills, going to the fact that they're poisoning our children with NutraSweet, which is aspartame and MSG, and the other excitotoxins, the glutamates. You need to understand what they're doing, and you're going to have to protect yourself. There really are wicked and evil people out there that certainly are withholding this information. For instance, here in California, they know the relationship between criminal behavior and nutrition. In fact, they had one prison where they actually demonstrated this repeatedly. And what did they do when they had the prisoners on a good diet who were getting out of the prisons and going straight? Why, they canceled the program of the prisons, of course. I mean, would that be the logical thing to do? Instead of encouraging things, but after all, if you didn't have any prisoners, how could you have a prison system? And you say nothing could be that wicked and evil. And ladies and gentlemen, we are dealing with organized evil, and you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the DVD or the VHS by the same title. You need to have the information. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. For the DVD, Nutrition and Behavior. For the books, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. The Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. We have a 4-tape set of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock, Life-Saving Secrets, that's Life-Saving Secrets, and we have so many other 4-tape sets that deal with health and health matters. You need to get the information, and then you need to begin changing your outlook and changing your diet for your entire family. And let me suggest that I think we carry that book on magnesium, The Miracle of Magnesium, and actually we carry magnesium as well under the RL label. I take it regularly, and I can tell you personally that I believe that I was magnesium deficient before, and I can certainly see the difference as far as my pulse rate is concerned. I'm not dropping my beats anymore like I was. We carry a number of books, Death by Medicine, Death by RX by Richard Strand. We carry a book on statin drugs, on GMO foods. We have a 4-tape set on statin drugs. They're poisoning our children and giving them autism. It used to be 1 in 10,000 children had autism. Now it's about 1 in 160, and 16 times more common in boys than girls. It's probably, down around 1 in 50 boys will have autism. We have a 4-tape set on autism. It's a preventable disease. It primarily comes from the mercury toxicity that we're, of course, giving our children. They tell you they've taken their mercury out of the childhood vaccines. They don't tell you that influenza immunization is not a childhood vaccine. There's a full dose of mercury in that, and then your tetanus toxoid and everything else. Why would you do something like that? Well, there are people who have a different worldview. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And this evening, for the second hour, we're going to have Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist who has certainly a tremendous amount of information on all sorts of health products, and I'm constantly amazed as we go into the various intricacies of what's going on today and what you can really learn about nutrition. And certainly between Bill Sardi and Russell Blaylock, if you follow their advice, why, you're going to certainly have tremendous advantages, and your children are going to be a lot healthier and a lot happier. Well, right now, let's get back to Bill Sardi. Hi, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening, and that isn't fair to put me in the same league with Dr. Blaylock. I'm just a reporter. He's the authority.
Well, I think you're both excellent. I enjoy having you both. And what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, we certainly are going to talk about the Congress passing the adverse event reporting requirement for dietary supplements. The witch hunt is on. They passed this at the 11th hour. They got actually health groups to think it was something good, and it's going to bring about a reign of terror on the dietary supplement industry. And, well, it's all predictable. And, well, worse is coming because as every dietary supplement becomes popular, they find a way to knock it down. And so we'll talk about that a little bit here tonight. And also, as you saw earlier this week, I did forward to you a report about the adjuvants, the things that they put in the vaccines. During the Gulf War, they now admit, this is many years later, about 16 years later, that, of course, the aluminum adjuvant linked to Gulf War illness induces motor neuron death in mice. And, of course, this was the Journal of Neuromolecular Medicine, February of 2007. These are advanced issues, and that's why we can report on it. And, of course, it talks about the vaccines that these Army troops got back in, in that first war, the Gulf War illness. They believe that affected about 400,000 troops. And that they did show they used the same dosage as the in these mice as what the humans would have gotten, same equivalent dose by body weight. And they did show a tremendous lack of energy. They lost, they had behavior problems. They had issues with motor control. Neurons were destroyed and so on. So this is 16 years later they finally report on this. This is just absolutely criminal that they would let this happen. Say it was all in their head, made it look like a bunch of malcontent troops looking for some sort of extra pay or compensation, when it looks like all along it was the vaccine.
Now, of course, it was not only they used the aluminum, but they actually used squalene too, didn't they?
That's correct.
The combination of aluminum and squalene.
That's correct.
For our listeners, why squalene, at least as far as America is concerned, was an experimental adjuvant. It was not supposed to be put in. The government has steadfastly denied that they had any squalene in those vaccines, and yet we carry a book called Vaccine A, which goes into great detail. And it was the people that had antibodies to squalene, in other words, that received it, were the ones that had the Gulf War syndrome. And so they're still, to this day, denying that they put squalene in there, but these were studies that were done with mice. And this is the most amazing study, because these mice, of course, when they couldn't run through a maze, they lost their ability to think after getting the same things they gave to our men. Go ahead and pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly I was stunned by this. You know, as I received it, I called you immediately to tell you of this report with the Gulf War illness in the animals. And to think that our government would drag its feet for 15, 16 years and then report on this, well, it's just unconscionable. I don't know. I'm just lost here. I mean, these poor guys have been suffering with this kind of thing, and who knows how many of them killed themselves, who knows what.
Well, let me tell you, we have actually the report from the Veterans Administration, which I got. There are 695,000 troops served in the Gulf. Now, most of them, of course, took this vaccine, and many of them got the experimental vaccines, which to this very date, the government denies that they gave, and yet other people have found the antibodies of the squalene, you know, certainly in their blood, and these are the ones with the symptoms of Gulf War Syndrome. But what is really so significant about this entire study is we have the Veterans Administration figures, which we got off the internet from the Veterans Administration, of the 695,000 troops, over 10% of them are now dead. And if you'd like to get those figures, we'd be glad to provide them for you or tell you where you can get them up on the internet. If that is really true, how could it be that they could conceal that from the American people? How is it that everybody doesn't know that over 10% of that 600, this is actually about over 80,000 have already died of the 695,000. These were healthy young men just 15 years ago, and now over 80,000 of them are dead. How could you conceal that in America with freedom of the press? And if you want to verify it, we've got the figures. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, certainly all of this is shocking, and I don't know these troops serving there. They're older now. Who knows how many health problems they've continued to suffer with chronically over time. And it's discouraging. Our troops do need special kind of care for this kind of exposure. There was exposure to radiation there and some other things, the used up uranium and this kind of thing, so used in some of the weapons and so on, and some of this was confirmed. So it appears that our troops go and come back, and there's really no recognition of these hazards. They just deny it and make it look like the troops are malingerers. So I think it's unfortunate, especially when they made to look like this in the news press here, that it's all in their head. And so I think that's rather discouraging to veterans and so on and people serving in the military.
Now they just give them a little Prozac and they tell them it's just post-traumatic stress syndrome. And these people all have exactly the same symptoms of an autoimmune disease. And yet, of course, they tell them there's nothing wrong with them, and they know there is. Well, I assume our guest is Sid Pilsarney, and he's certainly been talking about a recent study that was published. It came out of some place, I think, in British Columbia, where they actually had given these mice the equivalent amounts of the aluminum, which is in the vaccines. Remember, these kids were getting, they were getting 10 or 15 vaccines within 2 days, sometimes 20 vaccines within 2 days, loaded with the aluminum. And then, of course, they were using, at least in some of them, an experimental vaccine with squalene. And we know that because the people who have the Gulf War Syndrome have the antibodies to squalene, and the government's done everything to keep this secret. We can't let Osama bin Laden know about that squalene on our vaccines. Or maybe they just don't want the American people to know that they experiment with our soldiers and with our fighting men. After all, Henry Kissinger had said it quite well. You'll find the quotation in Woodward and Bernstein's book, The Final Days, The Story of Nixon, where Kissinger is quoted as saying, you know, our military is simply stupid, dumb animals to use for foreign policy purposes. And that's the way the elite feel about our men, our fighting men who go overseas to fight for their freedom. Go ahead there, Bill.
Well, these things go on like this, and I don't know that there's any action or action that we can take. I think then it becomes even more frustrating because nobody can come to bat for these soldiers. They're now veterans, and they're maybe some years past. I think some of these troops have actually served in both of these wars, so I don't know where all this fits in, but I only wish we had some action to take, something to wake up and make sure it never happens again. Squalene is actually used as a immune booster in Japan and elsewhere, but using it with aluminum might have been the problem. Maybe it was the first time they ever did this, and of course, as squalene turns on the immune system, that's exactly what autoimmune disease is, it's switching it on but never turning it off, and then you have an issue there. So maybe with the aluminum, this is what it actually caused. So we're not exactly sure, but we're pretty sure that 400,000 troops on that first round in the Gulf War certainly came back with something that was bothering them. So just a pretty disappointing moment in medicine here, and hopefully we can find another way around these things in the future. But obviously, you're going to go in the military, or they're not going to shoot straight with you over these issues, and you need to submit to these vaccines almost blindly. So it does make it kind of difficult. To get back with what I led off with, talking about, of course, the Congress passing the adverse event reporting law for dietary supplements. And so from here on out, the dietary supplements have to have some wording on the side. It says if you experience a serious adverse event, that is something that requires you to see a doctor, then you need to report this to the FDA. Now, I don't know if you're going to get a vitamin ticket from some sort of vitamin police that you didn't report anything, but the Republicans and the Democrats were able to pass this lame duck legislation at the same time they're going to rush through massive drug experimentation and allow drugs to get passed through sooner through the FDA.
Are they going to put anything on the bottles of your drug saying that if you have an adverse reaction, you should required to report that to the government as well?
No, and of course a lot of these come from a pharmacy where the actual labeling you never see, the product insert is very small type, and there's never any recourse in there as to what to call if you do have an adverse reaction. So unless a doctor, you might see a doctor, and then if he doesn't report it for a drug, why, and often they don't, then you don't really have an accurate figure. But it is kind of odd that in an era when Vioxx killed 20,000 Americans, that there's no warning label there on a Vioxx, which or similar drugs. There's other COX-2 inhibiting drugs seem to do this. And yet on the dietary supplements, which are safer than aspirin, safer than tap water, and certainly safer even than table salt, that we are now requiring adverse event reporting. Now, I want to ask your audience to think about this for a minute. Think that you bought a dietary supplement, vitamin C, something, and ginkgo extract, some sort of herbal extract. And on the side, it says, if you experience a serious adverse reaction, then report on this number. Now, what are people going to do with that? The first thing that comes to my mind is, oh, there must be serious adverse reactions associated with this product. So that puts the idea in people's heads that, you know, report here because there must be some. Of course, they couldn't find any. They never ran a demonstration project to prove that this adverse event reporting would do anything. It's just a witch hunt. And let's assume, just for fun, that thousands of people report these adverse events. Would they prove cause and effect? No, not whatsoever. Because we don't know how many people got them. We don't know whether the other medicines they took with it. We don't know lots of things. So it's not a controlled study. We wouldn't know whether this actually was doing this or not. But if we get enough numbers, and they report this in the news media, or a lawyer can then, by subpoena, force these adverse event reports out of a manufacturer, because that's who you report them to, and then they're forwarded on to the FDA. Well, then, you see, it could make your company look bad, your product look bad, and it's all very much like a witch hunt, because you could have some adverse events, allergic reactions, these kind of things. Depends. Of course, the question is, what's a serious adverse reaction? Well, it's anything that requires you to see a doctor, but that could be as benign as a little temporary diarrhea, whatever. There are people who get nauseated after taking dietary supplements. Usually these things go away. Maybe their body's adapting over some time or what have you. But this is actually what's going to be required, and what I'm thinking now is that the legal profession is going to be wringing its hands, waiting for these adverse event reports to be thrown in to the hopper at the dietary supplement companies, and then they'll subpoena them under some excuse, to try to get a look at the mall and then hold them really by for extortion. Either pay off that attorney or he'll expose it all, or the news media will grab this and make it look like the products are bad. It could be people overusing the products, taking more than the recommended dosage, so on. So
now, of course, the telephone number is the producer of this, or is the telephone number government?
The telephone number will be to the manufacturer, and then the manufacturer is obligated to report to the FDA. So where the records end up is with the manufacturer, and of course, this is where they want it to be, so that they can do this nitpicking.
Well, I really assume that this is really a part of a gamut, sort of a scam by the big drug companies. They don't want the competition. They don't want anybody really who can get people well using nutritional supplements. They want to keep them on their Vioxx and on their Celebrex and certainly on their Lipitor and all of these overly expensive medications. You know, certainly some of the treatments for cancer, chemotherapy treatments, $150,000, $200,000. They certainly wouldn't want anything that would get people well. Without, of course, this tremendous expense, you say, nobody would be that crass. I mean, the reason that they want the drugs is to help people, and I wish that were really true, but anybody who has never read Marcia Angel's wonderful book, The Truth About the Drug Companies, needs to get it. Marcia Angel is an instructor at Harvard University. For many years, she was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly the most prestigious medical journal in the United States. And her book, The Truth About the Drug Company, should be required reading for everybody. Because she wrote that book, of course, they attacked her. They attacked her viciously. I had a debate with somebody who worked for the drug companies, some sort of publicity organization for all the drug companies. And it was very obvious after talking to them they were tracking her activities. When you speak out against big pharmacy, where they're going to come after you and destroy you if they possibly can, because we're talking about billions of dollars of profit, the most profitable industry in America today.
Well, it certainly is. And, of course, I'm getting some of my notes tonight from Byron Richards. He's a certified clinical nutritionist. And he was on News with Views yesterday. If you go online, you might check his article, Big Pharma Juggernaut Rolls to Victory, Health Freedom Reels. And it's a part one, so apparently he's got a part two coming. But as a certified clinical nutritionist, Byron Richards is talking about this whole thing and says that the Democrats love the smell of any legislation smacking of increased regulation of health care, and thus they pounce on this bill and passed it 134-4 on both sides of the aisle. And of course he talks about the big pharma Democrat cartel, and of course this is composed of Dick Durbin, John Dingell, Henry Waxman, Susan Davis, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Charles Schumer, Senator Edward Kennedy, Senator Hillary Clinton, and these are the big pharma sponsors. And they're sure to pile on the dietary supplement industry, says Byron Richards, in the coming months. And we can expect more of this. Actually, the pharmacy industry is going to get their comeuppance, too, as they've tripled the price of drugs during the Bush 2 administration. And, of course, they've just gotten away with this thievery due to paying off the politicians on both sides of the aisle. But now the Democrats are angry and are going to probably work towards some sort of a bidding basis for drugs paid for by Medicare. And, of course, some of these obscene profits are going to come down. Most likely the drug companies are laying off thousands. And, of course, this poses some problems in the stock market because they're the healthiest stocks on Wall Street. And, of course, what comes out of this, we're not sure. But I would suspect that the dietary supplements and the pharmacy business are really going to have it taken to them.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Bill Seide as we talk about what's happening, certainly as far as the reporting now of dietary supplements. Why are we doing this? Did anybody show that the dietary supplements are dangerous? No. But they might be. They might be. And so we've got to have government reporting for the government. Well, Bill, pick up the story there.
Well, certainly we think about dietary supplements. For so many of you, you may be suspicious. You may want to go to your doctors. You may want to ask about them. But your doctors aren't prepared for those answers, unfortunately. And so it's led to many kind of closet dietary supplement users, and they've got them in their pockets, but they never tell their doctor. And as the doctor says, well, you're getting better, sometimes they'll confess up and throw the pills out there and let the doctor see what they are. And he usually dismisses the whole idea and says, go home and keep taking what you're taking. So the doctor's in a bind, too, because now they have these standards of care. Medicare is now requiring doctors to treat patients in certain ways or else they won't pay you. And so they're getting everybody in lockstep. And this is the new thing that they're doing. And so doctors can't vary. They can't be creative. They can't do anything out of this. And so now if you've got cancer, you're going to get chemo and radiation because that's the standard of care. But chemo and radiation cannot penetrate a solid tumor, and 70% of the cancers are solid tumors of the breast, prostate, colon, and lung, for which chemo and radiation is worthless, though they'll do the treatment because it's a standard of care. So you may have high blood pressure, and that high blood pressure may come from high blood sugar levels. High blood sugar levels cause high blood pressure. The blood vessels won't dilate or widen to control your blood pressure. So, but does the doctor give you a pill to control your blood sugar? No, he gives you a pill that's an ACE inhibitor. This one controls things out of your kidneys. They can give you a beta blocker, controls your heart rate, how fast it beats. They can give you a diuretic that helps you wash fluid out of your system and helps reduce the pressure. But all those are artificial and never really address the cause. And therefore, they usually have to give you 3 or 4 blood pressure medicines because none of them address the actual cause. And so then you have side effects from those drugs and then drugs to counter those side effects. And, of course, it's kind of an endless thing. As they give you the some of these medicines like the water pills, the...
diuretics.
Diuretics is the word I'm looking for. Then you're certainly going to have an issue of you're going to lose potassium, and sometimes they replace that, but they forget to tell you to take magnesium. And, of course, the one that you really need is thiamine, vitamin B1. The doctors never think that you should be on a multivitamin to replace that. And as thiamine is washed out on these diuretics, then, of course, you're in a little bit of a jam, and you start to go into heart failure. Doctors completely miss this. Some patients actually die. And, of course, there's just no recognition of it. So this is the kind of thing you get because the doctors certainly aren't not trained and certainly are not familiar with the nutritional conflicts of many of the medicines of what they deplete you of. And certainly many of the drugs that we have today, their side effects are caused by them conflicting with certain nutrients or causing nutrient depletion in the body. So that's why we do have the side effects there. So unfortunately, we live in an era when the public still has a great deal of confidence in doctors and in government press releases and the government's advice to take flu shots and all of these things, but there's no evidence that they're helpful. And, of course, the doctors are caught in the middle between a bunch of false information that's given to them, too. So it's really a very conflicting thing.
Hold that thought, Ray. Be back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, the difficulty is the doctors are told that, you know, they should give their patients the influenza shots. Oh, we've got to give them to the elderly because they may die if we don't. Well, of course, you know, they tell you 30,000 or 35,000 people die every year of influenza, and that simply is not true. They die of pneumonia, but it's not necessarily due to influenza at all. And then, of course, now the whole idea is when they've done the studies on the effect of the influenza immunization on the elderly, they find it really doesn't do any good. And so because of that, they said, well, maybe now if we just immunized all the young people, why, of course, then they wouldn't have the infection, and they wouldn't give it to the older people, and that's how we're going to bring influenza under control. And so they came up with starting to give our children the influenza shots at 6 months of age, loaded with thimerosal, which poisons the mind and the reproductive system and give it to pregnant women in the first trimester of the pregnancy when it'll do the most damage to her unborn child. And it's all about the flu shots, and the doctors are told to do this. And if they don't do it, it's almost, or at least offer them to the patients, it's almost tantamount to malpractice and the massive propaganda campaign, doing everything they can to convince the public, rush down to your doctor to get your influenza shot, because if you don't get one, you're going to die someday. And that's true. We're all going to die someday, but there are no studies that show that this is really effective, are there, Bill?
No. None whatsoever. And there aren't any for the cervical cancer vaccine now being pushed on the third world, as the headline today. These vaccines, we continue to push them without good scientific evidence. And this is really, just controlling thought here. I mean, that's all this is. Anybody who wants to look, why? But these are going to be the standards of care. They're not going to let your kids in schools if they don't get the cervical cancer vaccine shots and so on. This is the kind of thing that you're going to see. Public's going to be confused. Sometimes they get behind these things mistakenly and don't realize they're of no benefit. So, but for some good news tonight, I do want to say natural medicine still rules, and there's so many good things that if they outlaw something, why nature comes up with another one and replaces whatever we've lost. And wonderful study out of the December issue of Neurobiology of Disease, and it's talking about pomegranate juice decreases the beta amyloid load in the brain and improves behavior in a mouse model of Alzheimer's disease. Have you seen the pomegranates this year? They've got some great ones down at the store. I don't know if you eat fresh pomegranates, but I do.
I haven't had them enough, I think, since I was a boy.
Yeah, so everybody can remember the pomegranate bush around the corner where we went and grabbed some and ate them as kids, but I still do eat those, and I can tell you right here, I mean, they not only proved that this stuff eradicated the plaque, but it actually improved the behavior. Have you got an old mouse around? Maybe even an old grandpa who's struggling with his memory. Who knows? But at least it's good for the mice, and they swam faster and accomplished more tasks, it says here. So, you know, they really pepped up, and it could be related to the disappearance of this beta amyloid plaque from the brain. This was done at Loma Linda University here in Loma Linda, California. Neurobiology of Disease, December of 2006. It's a wonderful, encouraging report. And, of course, there's pomegranate juice and so on. Some of those things may be helpful. Another wonderful report out today. Vitamin K may reverse artery hardening. We may remember vitamin K is in green leafy vegetables, even in that simple head of lettuce that you might have at home. You'll find lots of vitamin K, and of course the iceberg lettuce, it's not a dark green leafy, but it does have vitamin K, and you will find that it's very beneficial for you. And they often talk about vitamin K, you see, it's preventing the calcification of the arteries. Many women have this because as they go into menopause, the calcium is coming out of their bones and clogging their arteries and sticking on the wall and so on. So vitamin K, very important for you to get your dark green leafy vegetables or maybe a dietary supplement here and there to help make up for all of this problem. And it does show, again, that these dietary supplements may fit in, do something very beneficial for us.
All right, well, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes here with Bill Sardi as we explore some of the things that are going on today. And there are all sorts of studies that are being done out there by scientists to show the benefits of certain of the specific dietary things. You know, I believe that every plant and certainly every vegetable and every fruit was put on this earth for a purpose, I believe. God doesn't make mistakes, and when he provides these things, so many of them have wonderful, wonderful medicinal benefits. We can't prescribe them as medications. You can prescribe them as health supplements, though. We recommend them as health supplements. And if we were eating a lot more fruits and vegetables, we wouldn't see as much problems as we do today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Sardi. Bill, somebody had called in, and had you heard anything at all about the trying to make the flu shots mandatory?
Well, I haven't heard that, no.
I haven't heard that either. So,
no.
I mean, I think that they would like to, and I think down the line, you know, if we did have a major epidemic, they would try to make the injections or the inoculations mandatory. But I would not take them because I don't trust them. I mean, there are too many instances where they put things in there that they knew were harmful to women in the third world countries, putting in contraceptives in the vaccines, experimental things in the vaccines that they gave to our first Gulf War veterans. We know that there are mycoplasms that they put in the vaccines. We know there certainly were hepatitis B vaccine had a HIV virus in it. 75% of the homosexuals who are foolish enough to volunteer for the study contracted AIDS. That is not an accident. I really don't trust the people who are making the vaccines, and so I certainly would never want any vaccine that they insisted was perfectly safe.
Well, I do see, you know, when you look at the headlines here, I mean, they're trying to push the flu shots again. The peak flu season probably comes somewhere in January, February, but they're trying to say that they've got plenty of shots this year. They're saying there's not a shortage. I don't know what they mean. They made a little over 100 million shots this year, but there's 300 million people in the country. They never inoculate most of us, and so but there's never a pandemic. So there's only about 350 million doses of flu vaccine in the whole world, in fact. For a population of 6 billion, I don't know what they're trying to say. I guess it's all about money, I think. But nonetheless, this is what we have, and government keeps pushing these things. People keep lining up and rolling their sleeves up and paying their $5 or $10 and feeling like they had something good done for them.
But I think, you know, really what's so disturbing is this. They want to make the human papillomavirus,
right,
mandatory, and they're charging a phenomenal amount of money for it.
$320.
And there's absolutely no evidence that it's going to stop cervical carcinoma. That's the thing.
Sure.
I mean, all that they really did in their studies was to show it the pap smears, wasn't it?
Right. But that's all they've shown is improvements in the pap smear, but no actual improvement in the cancer rate. So it's just extrapolated.
They extrapolate it at $320 a shot. That's pretty good if you could especially give it to about 50 million girls.
Well, you've got these flu vaccines. There's really
Hold that right there, Bill. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Bill Sardi. Bill, pick this story up.
There's really no way a flu vaccine is going to last for long, if ever, because by the time they've made it up and then get it to you, the flu vaccines, by their very nature, flu viruses mutate very, very rapidly. So by the time you've got a flu strain in circulation, it's obviously different from the vaccine you prepare. And just by its very nature of its very fast mutation rate, there's no way you're ever going to make flu vaccine work. Now, I think what they might be hearing is in this mandatory issue is it's possible if they can phony up a flu pandemic and then without making it mandatory, but tell you you can't come down and be in this restaurant or you can't shop here or whatever unless you show a card that you got because everybody's afraid your kids are going to come to our school or this or that, and so all of a sudden the social pressure will be there, and the next thing you know, you're going to be forced to have the shot. And I see this kind of thing coming. And I think it'll be a wonderful exercise to see if they can get everybody in line to swallow the poison just for drill, because I just kind of see this. It's obviously a tremendous market, and you imagine they dug up this phony avian flu, this bird flu, which only affects birds. And now they've got a chance to protect us from something we could almost never get. Some of us actually do get the bird flu, but we develop antibodies and don't even know it. And so what's going to go on is they're going to protect us from something that never would threaten our lives, but make massive amount of money as they see the whole world as a market. So if they can establish a flu scare for the whole world, and then panic everybody and then tell everybody you can't get on an airplane and there'll be sanctions against one country or another, and then everybody will panic and race to have these shots. And, of course, you've got billions of dollars being made. And then once you've got one good pandemic or so-called pandemic in, why then every year you get people frightened and line up again. So that's all they really have to do. And this all came out of meetings in Washington, D.C., where President Bush met with the vaccine makers and then promised them that this was going to be a very promising industry. And, of course, they use government as their public relations agency to drum up publicity, the Centers for Disease Control, fanning the flames of fear and, of course, that there'll be shortages of the flu, just as if there's a cabbage patch doll at Christmas time that's in short supply, you better race to get yours. It's the same idea with the flu vaccine every year. Now, this year it's a little different. They couldn't pull off the same trick, so they made a few more of the flu vaccines and hoping to, of course, just herd the public into the little sheep gate so that they can follow their way in to, you know, get these worthless flu vaccines. And, of course, for the very, very young, they can't make enough antibodies to really develop immunity. For the very old, they have the same problem. Their immune system's not in top shape like when they were younger, and, of course, they just can't make the antibodies. So I'm not sure that these shots really amount to much. We really need to be working on innate immunity, or boosting our own immune system to work from within. A wonderful way we can do that in the wintertime is vitamin D. It's sunshine in a bottle, vitamin D supplements, the Vitamin D Council, world's leading authorities trying to push us into the idea that we all need vitamin D. In the wintertime, the death rates in the world go up. Certainly colds and flu come around. Dr. John Cannell of the Vitamin D Council is challenging everyone in the winter months to find a 50,000-unit vitamin D pill. There are some available. And then as they get the first signs of a cold, I did one day, to take 50,000 units of vitamin D for 3 days. I took 20,000, and my runny nose went away first thing in the morning. Then it started to come back a little later. I took another 15,000 and it went away, and then it started to come back a little later and I took a little more. I could just watch it doing this all day. I worked all day, didn't bother me. The next morning I got 50,000 units of vitamin D and I didn't know that I even had a cold. So it works, and many people will find that it's just the lack of the sunshine exposure making the vitamin D in the winter months. Even if we get the sun, it takes us a lot more sun exposure in the winter months to make vitamin D. So a good idea for us all, no matter where you're listening from, but certainly more in northern climates, this is even more important than that is, and especially for people with autoimmune disease, lupus, rheumatoid, sarcoid, other kinds of issues, that you'll want to get enough vitamin D because it normalizes your immune system and seems to work quite well. And, of course, it's now made, well, it's in Newsweek, Newsweek magazine this week. It says vitamin D in the spotlight. This critical nutrient builds bones, helps fight infection, and may protect against some cancer. Do we get enough? Says Dr. Meyer Stamfer, MD, of Harvard Medical School. You know, I wrote Dr. Stamfer this past week because Harvard put out a great big report on vitamins and minerals, and he had the gall to say that watch out for vitamin D. If you get 2,000 units, it could be toxic. And I wrote him, how could you possibly put your name on that report? Then he clears it all up over here in Newsweek and says, well, you ought to have at least 1,000 units, which is so trivial, it's ridiculous. And if you stood out in the sun at noontime in Arizona with just your swim trunks on in the summer for 1 hour, why, you'd make 10,000 units of vitamin D from the sun exposure. There's never been a case of sun poisoning from vitamin D. Never heard such a thing. But if you get 1,000 or 2,000 units from your dietary supplements, why, that could be toxic. So these kinds of myths are spread around. People are scared away from the dietary supplements. We would reduce the cancer rates in the United States by 30 to 50% if the public would catch on and get at least 2,000 units of vitamin D every day. That's a perfectly safe dose, according to the National Academy of Sciences. And even though the National Academy of Sciences said it was a perfectly and is a perfectly safe dose, Dr. Stamfer in the Harvard report said don't take more than 2,000 because it could be toxic. So you get this kind of statement that he makes. It's all a bunch of double talk, and they've been dragging their feet on this for a long time. And Dr. Stanford really talks out of two sides of his mouth. At one moment he says maybe 1,000. He says that would be okay. That's what he recommends. So he says some others recommend 4,000 and say that there's no toxic level at that point. And others say you can say, just like I just said, you can make 10,000 units after an hour in the sun. So he says, stay tuned. There's much more to be learned. More to be learned. You're supposed to be leading the way, Dr. Stanford. And this boring little vitamin called vitamin D really needs to step up. And why aren't we fortifying our foods and making all Americans get enough vitamin D? Our children's bones are weak. Our female retirees, women, are having osteoporosis. And if they got enough more vitamin D, they certainly would absorb more calcium and utilize it better. They wouldn't need these high doses of calcium that cause constipation and other side effects. So, you know, we're just letting the whole public suffer. And just think of Northern Europe. The laws in the Northern European countries are so onerous. They're worse than here, and they do not allow high-dose vitamin D supplements. And they live in the clouds, in the winter, in the cold, when they cannot get enough vitamin D, and they suffer terribly from this in their immune system. So I'm at a total loss at the irresponsibility around the world as this story about vitamin D. If we could just get Americans to believe this and that it's not harmful and take it, we would see the death rate in the United States decline and the health quotient go way up. I mean, the lack of vitamin D is related to obesity. It's related to depression, seasonal affective disorder, they call it, SADS. It's related to high blood pressure, related to autoimmune diseases we previously mentioned, and certainly related to cancer rates. It's a very, very widespread problem that we have, certainly related to lack of muscle tone, heart failure. It just kind of goes on and on. And we need more vitamin D. If it fortify our foods, we wouldn't have to worry about it. They're not. You need to make sure you get at least a couple thousand units of vitamin D. Dr. Cannell is saying maybe 5,000 units a day. That the 5,000 units a day is, let's see, 40. I have to divide that into the right number to tell your audience. But see, the units kind of scares everybody because it sounds like it's really big. But what you end up there, it's about 125 micrograms is 5,000 units. 125 micrograms, about one-tenth of 1 milligram, and you're worried about it being an overdose. This is what the government and other health authorities have tried to tell you while they're behind the scenes trying to develop vitamin D as an analog, a different type of patentable molecule, which they can then make millions and billions of dollars out as cancer treatment or whatever. We just need simple vitamin D. The human body cannot do without it. It's essential for life. It essentially means that radiation, solar radiation, is essential for life. And we do see the death rates from all kinds of diseases go up in the winter months. So it'd be helpful for us to learn about vitamin D. What's in your multivitamin is probably about 400 units, so trivial that it won't raise your blood levels whatsoever. And so I was listening to a doctor talk about getting the levels of vitamin D up, and he predicted that we should get our levels up way up to about 125. Most experts were even just saying 75 to 85, and he's way above that. So, and we find all kinds of other diseases disappear, too, when you get up to these level, these blood levels.
I remember, Chris, when I was practicing, and I used the Mayo Clinic approach, which was 50,000 units of vitamin D twice a week for elderly women with osteoporosis, and we never had any problems with that. You wouldn't want to take it every day. Over 6 months or a year, you might get vitamin D toxicity, but certainly you can take 50,000 twice a week without any problem at all. And so what is this about? You know, we wouldn't want to go to 2,000 a day. That's just totally ridiculous. You need vitamin D for health. And certainly I think the exciting thing that certainly I've learned about it is that there's a great deal of evidence that it cuts down the incidence of cancer significantly. But you're not going to hear about that, and so the average doctor doesn't know that.
Well, and the doctors have been, you know, brainwashed on this. It's unfortunate, and so they don't know any better. The pharmacists feel the same way. What do you do with all the textbooks when you have a giant correction to make and they're already in print? You can go online and get scared away from vitamin D any day you want to read the Merck manual or anything like this. So these all need to be changed, and we wonder how in the world this misinformation got there. But where's the Food and Nutrition Board in the United States? They appear to be dragging their feet and avoiding these issues when they should be recommending massive food fortification. Now, when you get any kind of a dietary deficiency in the United States over a 5% level, they're supposed to fortify the foods. We're talking about 40% or more of Americans not getting enough vitamin D. So there should be a massive food fortification program, and this is what we think is going on. The medical profession is, at the high rank levels, is disease-mongering. They're letting this disease occur. What are you going to do when disease rates drop? It's less business, and we think that they're all in cahoots on this whole thing.
You know, there's another thing we've been studying a little bit about the iodine. And at one time, of course, we had added iodine to bread and several other items, as well as all salt was iodized. And now only about half the salt is iodized. And most of our people are really iodine deficient. And
well,
they've intestinally
when
taken
we realize
so many things.
This is so true. I mean, in Japan, they get milligrams of iodine from, of course, the they're getting this from their seaweed that they eat. But we here, of course, are in micrograms, a few hundred micrograms. And that's all we'll put in multivitamins and so on. Yet their health seems to be so much better. They seem to have a real good health quotient. So it really does make it difficult for us to realize what's going down here. And we probably ought to have quite a few milligrams of iodine. It seems to be related to breast cancer, lots of other diseases, and so on. Dr. Miller, I'm trying to remember his first name, but from the University of Seattle, is the expert on this. He's talked about this quite well. And this needs to be, of course, exposed again, and more of these things. So the public is just confused on these issues, and doesn't matter what we say, people are going to run right back to their doctor and say, they heard this on Dr. Stan's show, and is this true? Your doctor is not prepared to answer these questions.
And, of course, I think it would be so difficult for the average person to believe that there would be people, you know, who in the past, you know, when we actually had fortified iodine and vitamin D and a lot of things, and they've actually taken these things out. Why? Because they're necessary for health. And people would say nobody would want to make people sick, and well, I would say that certainly the average doctor wouldn't. But there really are evil people, and if you wanted to do the most damage, where would you be? Why, you'd be at the top of the public health pyramid, putting out false information to the American people who would believe you, because after all, you speak with authority. After all, you're an MD and you work for the government, and after all, we're from the government and we're here to help. And let me suggest, ladies and gentlemen, you listen to what Bill has to say. There are many, many things they could fortify, certainly our foods, with folic acid, and cut down tremendously on even the effect of the human papillomavirus on the spinal cord abnormalities, spina bifida, and things of that sort. Why aren't they doing these things?
Well, it is something that we question. The public doesn't see all this, and they're paralyzed by it all. It's all over their head. And so they don't know who to believe. And, of course, they're trying to seek an information out from a doctor, a third party. And, of course, they're waiting for confirmation. They can't find it, so they feel left out in the cold. You can, if you do have access to the Internet on the vitamin D issue, you can go to vitamindcouncil.com. And that is actually non-commercial and run by the world's top leading vitamin D researchers. I think you ought to be able to rely on them. You're going to see, of course, them begging, pleading America to begin to get more vitamin D into their bodies and to take and use this vitamin in special ways. Also, another use of it would be for autoimmune reactions for people with organ transplants. Instead of using steroids all the time, you can use high doses of vitamin D. It seems to normalize it out. If you get the flu, Well, we are concerned that you might get the some sort of a mutated flu that would bring about the 1918 Spanish flu all over again. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. There'd have to be a special kind of mutation occur where we'd be exposed to something we have virtually no antibodies towards at all. But nonetheless, this thought has been running around, and in 1918 they got the flu and their lungs filled up with fluid in an hour and they died. But if you've got enough vitamin D, well, you won't have that overfilling of fluid in your lungs, and you won't have the over response, and you'll survive the flu. So very important to get vitamin D.
And have a good supply on hand. I think that it's a good idea right now to start stockpiling some of these vitamins and minerals. And
the cod liver oil is not good enough. You'll only find a small amount there. So you really need to get one of these higher dose supplements.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Bill, I got so involved talking to you, I forgot to get your website out and how people can get your information.
Knowledgeofhealth.com. Try RadioLiberty.com first. We'll take second place, but please visit RadioLiberty.com and let them know how much you appreciate these broadcasts. We certainly do, and so that's why we help participate in them. But it's really important that people do get this knowledge. We try to make it available at KnowledgeofHealth.com, and of course we're try to do that. It's all available to you free. There's information about autism, blood pressure, cholesterol, all kinds of information that we write, authoritative reports with references. I don't pretend to be an expert. I do pretend to be a reporter. And we do that as if we got hired by you to go down to a medical library and look these things up. And sometimes you're just not ready to go into the natural ways that seem to be far more economical and effective, less problematic. But that's what our reports usually emphasize. And hopefully over time we'll win you over. You'll try some of these things to your good health and find that you're benefiting from it.
All right, that's knowledgeofhealth.com, and I suggest you go there and start just reading about these things. It's absolutely no charge at all. The information is valid, and the references are there if you want to look them up. But Bill is very, very accurate in the things that he puts out. Well, do you think we're making any progress? Do you think more and more people are beginning to realize they're going to have to be responsible for their own health?
I hope people kind of get that message, but for a lot of people, they just kind of feel, well, my doctor will make me well. And it's not their responsibility. My health plan, and they'll pay for my medicines, and this will make me well. I think people are so paralyzed and frightened that they couldn't wean themselves away from their blood pressure medicines or statin drugs or whatever. No matter what we say, they're just too frightened to do it. So there's just a grip over them, and they can't fathom this.
Well, I really appreciate so very much for being with us this evening, and thank you so very much for sharing your thoughts on this. We'll talk to you later, and
okay.
God bless you.
Okay, good night now.
Good night. All right. Well, I guess it's been Bill Sardi. And certainly we certainly recommend exactly what he's saying. You need to certainly be on supplemental vitamin D. But another thing you really need to think about is supplemental iodine. And
isn't it
amazing that they used to have all the salt was iodized, and then they took it out of about half the salt you're going to have to get especially, and they've taken it out from so many other things. And, of course, adequate iodine prevents many types of cancer. Why would they take out supplements that would prevent cancer? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Bill Sardi's website is knowledgeofhealth.com. Knowledgeofhealth.com or askbillsardi.com. It's the same website. Go there, get the information, and start being prepared to take care of your health. We asked the rhetorical question, why would, for instance, they take the vitamin D supplements out of so many of the health of the food products? Why don't they put the folic acid in many of the food products, or the iodine in the food products that we need, where we're not getting the adequate amounts? And I would like to suggest the four tapes that we have. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. It's a tape set that was made in the early 1990s, interviews with a Dr. Dunnigan, who back in 1969 Why, that's almost, what, 75, 76, 77 years ago. Dr. Dunnigan heard Dr. Richard Day, who is the medical director of Planned Parenthood, talking to a group of doctors in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and telling them that he was going to tell them about the plan for the future. He worked with a group called The Order. They really felt there were too many people in the world. There were lots of treatments for cancer that were effective, and they were going to conceal them. They were going to create terrible new diseases that would actually eliminate large parts of the population. Of course, it was just about 10 years later when the first cases of AIDS began to show up in San Francisco. They weren't recognized for 13 years, but for 12 years, but they were there at that time, 1981. They created new diseases. It's a fascinating four-tape set. It's a talk given by Dr. Dunnigan, my interview with him, Randy Engel's interview with him. If you'd like to really understand why the Japanese are producing better cars than General Motors today, why many of our athletes are getting such fantastic salaries, I mean, how can a pitcher be worth, you know, $48 million for a year? You really need to hear this tape set. It's a four-tape set, and if you want to get the transcript, it's the only tape set we have a transcript of, The New Order of the Barbarians. You want to get it, you want to read it, you want to weep with me. If you'd like to understand something about the squalene vaccine, the experimental vaccines they gave our boys in Iraq during the first Gulf War, the book is Vaccine A. That's Vaccine A, and we have a four-tape set on Vaccine A. Could anybody intentionally hurt our young people? And I would like to suggest, as I've already told you, over 80,000 of the veterans of the first Gulf War are already dead. And they shouldn't be dead. And yet they are. And if you like those figures from the Veterans Administration, if you get one of the items we've talked about, we'll be glad to send it along. Just that's the VA figures on the Gulf War veterans. And if that's true, how could it be that they could conceal it from the American people if it's actually on the Veterans Administration's webpage? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. You need to get the new great new DVDs we've got on water fluoridation. Let the truth be told. Is your water safe? My talk of the hidden agenda on water fluoridation, my syllabus, and the book, The Fluoride Deception. You'll know everything you know about how they're poisoning our children with water fluoridation. We have 2-4 tape sets on that as well. If you want to know what they're doing with mercury and the influenza vaccine, an excellent talk given by Dr. Ayoub. It's available at the present time only on video. Then, of course, we have 2 DVDs. One of them, of course, is called The Smoking Truth, and the other is called Thimerosal. It goes into the fact as to why 1 in 5 American children has a neurodevelopmental effect. The government has done this intentionally. They're wicked people who are covering up the disastrous influence of thimerosal, the mercury that they put in the vaccines. There is no safe dose of mercury, and yet they're putting it in our childhood vaccines. And how they say they've taken it out, but they're leaving it in vaccines that we're giving to children. Oh, we've taken it out of the childhood vaccines, they say. Yes, but we've left it in vaccines we give to children. It's all a semantic game, and children's minds are being destroyed. Pray for America. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.